The test of a first-rate intelligence is the ability to hold two opposed ideas in the mind at the same time and still retain the ability to function. One should, for example, be able to see that things are hopeless and yet be determined to make them otherwise. F. Scott Fitzgerald. Good morning, and welcome to another edition of Dialogue.
Good morning, America. Good morning, Washington, D.C. I'm your host, Mark Levine. Welcome to Dialogue. I host my own radio show called The Inside Scoop, which is nationally syndicated. You can find out more about it at radioinsidescoop.com. But today and every month, I'm always glad to be here on WPFW dialoguing with you, and we have a lot to talk about. First of all, of course, there is the Potomac primary. I want to know how you voted and why you voted. My endorsed candidate, Senator Barack Obama, did extremely well, as all of you know by now, winning three-quarters of the votes in the District of Columbia primary, more than 60% in the states of Virginia and Maryland, and actually overtaking Hillary Clinton in the delegate race. But does that mean he's got the nomination? Oh, no, not at all. In fact, no matter how he does in the future, or frankly, no matter how well Senator Clinton does in the future, it's extremely likely that neither of them will get the number of pledged delegates they need to win the Democratic nomination. And that has to do with the messed up rules of the Democratic National Committee. I want to talk about those rules today. One is the role of superdelegates. We'll talk about who they are and the role that they play. And also the messed up Michigan and Florida primaries, where you had a conflict between the state legislatures there and the local Democratic parties and the National Democratic Party. Hillary Clinton won those races, but they weren't supposed to count. It's a big, rotten mess, and I fear that the fights among the Democrats may well help the Republicans in the fall. I want advice from you as to how we can get a nominee, do so without too much rancor in our party, because I'm a firm believer that whether it is Senator Obama or Senator Clinton who wins the race, either of them are leagues better than the Republicans, and I don't want to fight too much amongst ourselves. I want to know what you think about the rules as well as who you voted for. And then I want to talk about what's going to happen between now and the fall. The only way the Republicans are going to be able to beat the nominee is by swift voting him or her. That's the term used because that's what they did against John Kerry. They made up all kinds of lies about his military record. We know kind of what they're going to say about Hillary Clinton, but you may not know all the dirt that they're going to pull up against Barack Obama. I want to sort of inoculate you to that and talk about some of those things. One of the most things that you may not know, but I'm sorry to say you will know by November, is his controversial pastor, Jeremiah Wright, in Trinity Church in Chicago. And now Obama has tried to distance himself a bit from Pastor Wright, but I guarantee you the Republicans are going to be mentioning that name a lot come fall. Then there's stuff going on in Congress, which I give the inside scoop on. I used to work, by the way, as an attorney in Congress, so one of the things I'd like to do is give you the inside scoop on how the process works over there. And there's, well, two things going on. Things that really the Bush administration at first denied and then wouldn't confirm or deny and have now just admitted. And that is violations, of course, of the United States Constitution. Warrantless wiretapping. That means spying on Americans without a warrant, which is an express violation of the Fourth Amendment to the Bill of Rights. And first, of course, they deny doing it. Then they wouldn't admit or deny. And now, just yesterday, the Senate of the United States has voted not just to allow them to do it, but to give telecommunications companies immunity immunity for violating your constitutional rights. I am sorry to say that a local senator, Senator Jim Webb of Virginia, a Democrat, voted the wrong way on that. I expect the Republicans to violate our constitutional rights. I'm always sorry when Democrats do, and I want to talk about that and also talk about torture. Because the Bush administration has finally admitted that we torture people. Oh, they don't use the word torture. They say it's waterboarding. Waterboarding, of course, has been torture, has been defined as torture for more than a century in America. And this hour we'll talk about what waterboarding is, how it has been punished in the past, why the administration has finally admitted we do it, and how they insist we're going to do it again, even though the United States Supreme Court says it is illegal. You know, it's amazing what we're getting used to in this country. It's step by step, inch by inch. There's an old rule in the South, which is if you want to boil a frog, you've probably heard this before. If you want to boil a frog, what you don't do is take a hot pot of boiling water and try to stick the frog in. He will jump out. What you do is you put the frog in cold water, and you slowly, slowly raise the heat. And by the time the frog realizes he's being cooked, he's cooked. That's exactly what we've come to with civil liberties in America. And so there's lots to talk about, whether it's your vote yesterday, who you voted for, why, the rules of the Democratic National Committee, and how they differ, by the way, from the Republican rules. The Republican rules are usually a winner-take-all. So here you have John McCain winning only 26% in Washington State, but that is better than any other candidate, so he gets all the delegates. And what that means is, even though it's not Democratic, it means that they're going to have, well, a nominee very quickly. There is a certain advantage in the undemocracy of the Republican Party. And so we'll talk about the rules, we'll talk about the votes, and definitely I want to talk about the way that the Republicans are going to mistreat our Democratic nominee, whether it's Senator Obama or Senator Clinton, particularly with Senator Obama, because I think a lot of Democrats are afraid of what they might uncover. And then definitely talking about warrantless wiretapping and torture. It's all your show, your ability to call in. I want to hear what you say on these issues. The number is 202-588-0893, 202-588-0893. I'm going to give you a chance to call, and we'll be right back with your calls right after this. Welcome back to Dialogue. I'm your host, Mark Levine. We've got Gray on the line. Gray, welcome to Dialogue.
Hi.
Hello.
Yes.
What do you want to talk about? Your vote yesterday, the rules, or warrantless wiretapping torture? What's on your mind?
Well, I want to talk about some theories about why Clinton is losing and why Obama's winning, and also about the superdelegate thing.
Okay.
I think Clinton, from very early on, including her war for her vote for the war, she was running assuming she would be the nominee. She was running to appeal to the middle of the roaders, who they have to get to make up their minds and vote Democratic. She did the age-old mistake that the Democrats do, which is assuming they have their base and just campaigning to middle of the roaders. That was a mistake. And for all of the Republicans crossing over to vote for Democrats for Obama, everybody's saying how there's a lot of young people. These might be kids who don't want to go to war, because McCain is clearly stating that the only thing wrong with Iraq is that we don't have enough people on the ground.
Right, right. He wants 100 years there.
You draft them and you put them out in the war. They don't want to do that. So they're willing to defy mom and dad and how they were raised to stay home from a war.
You know, it's interesting to me when you talk about Hillary Clinton running as a moderate campaign. She is actually being flanked, if you will, on the left and on the right by Senator Obama. You're absolutely right. Senator Obama opposed the war starting in 02, very early on, very strong. And Hillary Clinton authorized the war in, as a way, she says, to get the inspectors in, to be fair to her. But he was consistent from the beginning, and he's got her on the left. But interestingly, he seems to have her on the right as well. If you look at the polls, it shows that independents, and not just in the Potomac primary, but independents and even some Republicans have been crossing over and voting for Barack Obama at a greater rate. In fact, Hillary Clinton, up until yesterday, and yesterday I think we've seen a change, but up until yesterday, she was winning the core Democrats mostly, and he was winning on independents and crossover votes. What we saw yesterday is that now he's starting to win the core Democrats as well, and really all demographic groups. So it's very interesting how a guy who would seem to be on her left, you know, opposing the Iraq war and so forth, is actually crossing over with independents. And I think one of the main reasons is that a lot of people who originally gave Bush the benefit of the doubt are recognizing how much he's run this country into the ground. And so now even independents and some Republicans are turning to Barack Obama. It's a very interesting thing. She's kind of getting squeezed in the middle.
Right, exactly, because everybody and their brother, Republican or Democrat, everybody wants out of this war. It is tearing this country apart.
Let me ask you the question. Let me ask you the question you raise about the superdelegates. Now, here is an interesting problem. According to the rules of the Democratic National Committee, you have this proportional representation, and that actually began in 1988. In the Dukakis-Jesse Jackson race, because Jackson won about 19% of the votes, and he only got about 10% of the delegates. So he insisted on proportional representation, and the Democratic Party followed suit. The problem with that, though, is that when you have a candidate starting to break through like Barack Obama, Hillary Clinton will always get her proportional representation, and neither of them are going to get over the finish line. I think we have to be prepared for that. And so will come the superdelegates. And they're the ones that are supposed to sort of make the difference in a close race like this. And then there's, of course, the question of Michigan and Florida. How do we count them? The rules say we don't count them because, heck, they put their primary too early, which I think they may now finally regret. But we just don't have enough delegates without the superdelegates in Michigan and Florida. What do you think should happen?
Well, I'm not sure I agree that they should have stripped them of their delegates because that disenfranchises them. And if they want to have a little bit more say early on, then I don't think I would have done that because it is a bit odd to have just a very few states deciding who gets to vote because so many people, Edwards, Kucinich, they drop out so early. And so I think if more states were allowed to vote early, I know it's hard on the campaigns. You know, I think it might be a better idea, so I'm not sure that I agree with that. But I think if they pull rank with the superdelegates and virtually do this, what would be an elitist vote to override the popular vote, Clinton might be more hated. You know, that's just my off the top of my head take on that. You know, we all out here wanting our votes to be counted, and then they pull this superdelegate thing.
Well, I'll tell you, I like that you're consistent. I appreciate that. You're saying basically count all the votes and don't necessarily count the superdelegates. There's some in the Obama campaign that are saying don't count Michigan and Florida because that's going by the rules, but then they don't want to go by the rules with the superdelegates. I like that you're being consistent, saying count all the real people's votes, don't necessarily count the party bigwigs' votes. But the problem is that we have this system, and here it is. I firmly believe, and I think you do too, that this system needs to be changed. For one thing, Iowa and New Hampshire, I'm sorry, they can't always get to go first. It's just unfair to the rest of us. I'd like to see where they organize it. We may need a law in Congress to do that, but basically they organize it and each state gets a chance to go first and make it random. And
yeah.
That, you know, it's just, I mean, no disrespect to the people of Iowa, New Hampshire, Nevada, and South Carolina, but they're not better citizens than the rest of us.
Exactly.
Why should they always get to go first?
That's a good idea. There needs to be some more ideas about that because we keep losing a lot of people early on, and I don't think those early on states are necessarily they don't have a greater enough of a representation of the full country.
Well, you know, if you want to choose four small states in different areas of the country, you know, we had Iowa, New Hampshire, South Carolina, Nevada. So next year it could be, you know, Minnesota and Connecticut and Georgia and Arizona. I mean, we could still do four relatively small states in the four areas of the country. Maybe not Georgia. It's probably too big. Maybe Mississippi. But you get the idea. I just think we need to give everybody a chance. Thank you for your call, Gray. I appreciate it. Let's go to Sean. Sean, welcome to Dialogue.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm doing good. How are you?
Okay. I'm going to tell you something. I'm not... I hate to sound like the Grinch, but basically, I'm not as enthusiastic about some of the results because Basically, to piggyback on the last caller, the political process, this process that we have is just...
It's a mess.
So many inconsistencies in it.
And I agree.
The thing is that I'm suspecting that some of the people that may have switched and voted for Barack for this particular primary, and you mentioned the Republicans, well, if I'm a strategist, I might do something like that, because technically, let's just be honest about it. A black Barack Obama is a more beatable candidate by a John McCain than a Hillary Clinton would.
That's very interesting, because I got to tell you, I talked with many, many Democrats all throughout. And frankly, one of the main reasons I made my decision, and I'll be perfectly honest with you, is that I thought that Barack Obama was more electable than Hillary Clinton. I like both of them. I'm not one of those people that is constantly attacking Hillary Clinton. I'd be very happy with her as president. I'd be very happy with him as president. In fact, I think the strategic move for Democrats yesterday was actually to cross over and vote for Mike Huckabee. It's that way, McCain's watching his right and he's not spending, you know, using all the money that he has to beat up on the Democrats. So, but it's interesting, because I came to the conclusion after watching all the independents vote for Obama, after seeing the huge excitement among the young people, after seeing a lot of white voters and Latino voters, it's not just blacks, supporting Obama, I thought he could do a better job against McCain than Hillary Clinton. You think that there's more racism than sexism and that he would do worse against McCain than Clinton?
I think that the situation in America, I think some of us kind of like, you know, we get caught up in the euphoria of just the general conversation that the mainstream media seems to always frame or start. But when it gets down to the nuts and bolts of how America really operates, I just don't think that a country that could do to New Orleans what it did and basically not have a conscience about it is going to all of a sudden turn around and be pro Barack Obama.
I just don't see it happening.
I think Barack is a wonderful candidate. He is a very brilliant man. I think Hillary has some great ideas. I think that her problem might have been, like the previous caller said, she tried too hard to appeal to the middle of the road folk and assume that her typical black Democratic base and the diehard Democrats were going to be locked in place and, you know, basically can be taken for granted. But that was not the case.
Sean, let me ask you this. I agree with you. I mean, George Bush and the Republican Party and all completely let Katrina happen. No one built up the levees. And of course, they were, you know, Mike Brown was out to lunch. But I think there was a revulsion among not Republicans, but say most Americans after Katrina. And I think that that's actually one of the main reasons why George Bush's approval rating is so low. Don't you think the majority of Americans saw that? They didn't see it beforehand, no question about it. I mean, no one, you know, noticed that the levees were breaking. No one seemed to care beforehand. But after it happened, there's enough of a revulsion, don't you think, that the American people might come around and support Barack Obama? Let me ask you this. Did you vote for Hillary Clinton because you thought she was more electable, or did you vote for Obama?
I actually voted for Obama.
Okay.
I voted for Obama, but I'm also a realist of what I really feel is going to happen. And to answer your question, my thoughts are, I think that Americans are tired of what has gone on, but I'm wondering, while Americans are tired of what's going on, I'm wondering, are they tired because the Bush administration was so bold about the way it went about setting up an imperial power, or are people genuinely upset with the way things have always been going? And that's critical. You have to make that distinction, because some people didn't really come on board to being against the war until they were until the number of soldiers reached 1,000.
Right.
Well, I was against it before it reached 1.
Right. as was Senator Obama.
I think that we got some Americans that they're sort of like I call fair weather Americans.
That's true.
They only get upset when, like, you look at the economy and stuff is sort of affecting some of your upper middle class people that aspire to be rich, and this economy is affecting them. So, wait a minute, we have to do something.
Right.
But when things was going okay, many were okay with what Bush was doing.
Which is why I think
I'm a little nervous about that, and I'm still for what Barack and even some things that Hillary are talking about. But I think that we really have to we need to proceed with caution.
Well, I agree with you. I'm real nervous, frankly, and I'm real nervous that Clinton and Obama supporters will fight each other and will be divided. And that's the one thing I really don't want. I would much prefer – I mean, I chose Barack Obama. I endorsed him publicly. But I'd much, much rather Hillary Clinton go out of the convention with strong support of all Democrats united than have some brokered, you know, convention where everyone's angry at each other and John McCain reaps all the benefits.
True.
So yeah, I just want to encourage everyone, if your candidate doesn't win at the end of the day, we still need you. The differences between Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama on policy matters are very, very small. You may disagree with Hillary Clinton's vote on Iraq, as did I, but she right now supports, within 60 days, she says, getting the troops out of Iraq. They really are very, very close in policy matters. So whoever wins, if your candidate doesn't win, please, we need you in the fall. Let's go to Sarah. Sarah, welcome to Dialogue.
Hi. I voted for Barack Obama yesterday, and I have to say, a couple of months ago, I couldn't distinguish if I wanted Clinton or Obama. But after, you know, watching them on the news and listening to what they had to say, I had to choose Barack. But I'm concerned with this superdelegate thing because, I mean, if the people chose Barack Obama and then superdelegates come in and then, oh no, it's Clinton, you know, people are going to be upset. So, I mean, I just don't understand that portion of it because I just thought, you know, if whoever wins the most states wins. But
yeah, we've got the weirdest system in the world, and it's the superdelegates. I'll tell you who they are if you don't know. They are elected Democrats across the country, so Democratic members of Congress, you know, Democratic senators, Democrats on the Democratic National Committee. So they are people who – the idea is you want to get the actual elected Democrats invested in whoever the nominee is. That's sort of the point, at least, of superdelegates, that you don't want a nominee going in there. I mean, John McCain, for example, seems to be going out there, and a lot of the Republicans aren't behind him. They think he's not, you know, right-wing enough. I think he's plenty right-wing enough. But so that's sort of the purpose of it. But it's what's really interesting is whether the Democrats should continue with this proportional representation or not. If we had winner-take-all states like the Republicans did, or even if we just had a better system. Let me explain how the proportional representation works, because I don't think a lot of people realize just how idiotic the system is. The way it works is that you go by congressional districts in the state. So in Virginia or in Maryland, you go by congressional districts, and then that's for three quarters, and then one quarter is winner take all. The problem with that is that many districts have an even number of delegates. So let's say you have the 8th congressional district in Virginia, which is Alexandria, Arlington, and it's got four delegates. I don't know that it has four, but let's just assume it has four. Unless Barack Obama beats Hillary Clinton by 62.5%, if he beats her by 62-38, they each get two delegates. It's a tie. 62-38 is a tie. He needs 62.5 to win 3-1. So then you get the candidates actually going to areas where they have an odd number of delegates rather than an even number of delegates, and you're canvassing there, because then if you win 50.1%, then you get another delegate. The whole thing is completely arbitrary, and it needs to be rearranged. And frankly, I don't often like Republican ideas, but their idea of, you know, giving more to the winner of a state – kind of makes sense to me as a way to coalesce around the candidates. At the very least, look, I like proportional representation. I believe in democracy. At the very least, we need odd numbers of delegates. Every delegate, it seems, should have 1, 3, 5, or 7 or something so that a candidate that gets 50.1% gets something for it. Otherwise, we're just going to have this situation again and again anytime when we have two strong candidates. Let's go to Dominic. Dominic, welcome to Dialogue.
Yeah, I actually think Hillary has to resign her candidacy.
I don't think she's going to listen to your advice.
I really think there's a new wind, not only in the Democratic Party, but across the face of the country. I think the Democratic, the way they were electing their people is geared towards control of the people in charge of the party. I actually think the people in charge of the party contrived the Florida and the Michigan primaries, which they eliminated. But still, that's a firewall at the convention for the control of the superdelegates and control of the leaders of the party.
Except that in Florida and Michigan, Clinton won those states. So actually, removing those delegates helps Obama.
What did you say?
Florida and Michigan voted for Hillary Clinton. Now, Florida, at least Obama was on the ballot.
Michigan's Florida and Clinton didn't vote, quite frankly, because they're not counted.
Well, no, I understand they're not counted. What I'm telling you is the people of Florida and Michigan's it's more dicey because Michigan, Obama took his name off the ballot and you had uncommitted. It's even harder to work out.
But the people in
Florida did vote for Hillary Clinton over Obama, and they're not being counted.
Hold on, let me
finish what I'm saying, then I'll give you a chance. What I'm saying is that in the case of Florida particularly, you have the Democratic National Committee actually harming the establishment candidate, harming Hillary Clinton because of their rules. So I don't know that this was all, you know, a carefully contrived plot to help Hillary. It actually hurts her in that instance. Go ahead.
Well, you're saying that they contrived to hurt Hillary in Florida, yet she won? I mean, that doesn't make sense.
What I'm saying is they're not counting her delegates, so that hurts her.
But she won.
Right.
And it works in her favor when she goes to convention.
Well, it only works in her favor if the delegates are counted.
It should be counted, even though her opposition didn't even campaign in Florida. I mean, I think there's a lot of wheeling and dealing going on and backroom politics in the Democratic Party.
Well, what else is new?
Well, exactly. That's exactly. But Hillary is in control of that because she's the established party leader and her husband for the past two decades.
Well, right. All I'm saying is that I think it's a mess mostly because it's just a mixed up system. I mean, the superdelegates, you're right. They do help the people in charge. But the Michigan Florida thing that helped Obama. So I just think it's a messed up system.
I don't think assuming that something of such importance is done in such an arbitrary fashion. I think these things are very controlled by party leaders.
What do you think of a proportional system versus a more winner-take-all system?
Oh, I love proportional system. Pacifica has a proportional system. I think it's great.
Okay, but it does lead to the fact that we may have a big fight in August where the Republicans won't.
Well, you know, that I belong to a big umbrella fractured party that agrees on something and takes control. I'm a Democrat.
Fair enough. That's what Will Rogers said. I've never been a member of an organized party. I'm a Democrat. Will you come out, though, if it sounds like you're an Obama supporter, if Hillary Clinton wins the nomination, even if it's with superdelegates, are you still going to come out strongly and support her against John McCain in the fall?
I have to vote for Hillary simply for her stance on socialized medicine.
Fair enough. I just want to keep us all together. Look, we may fight amongst ourselves. At the end of the day in November, we need every Democrat because, frankly, with some of the voting machines they have out there, I think we need to win in a very strong victory to beat John McCain. Thanks so much for your call. Let me go on to Marcus. Marcus, welcome to Dialogue.
Oh, good morning. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Good morning.
I'm so glad I had the opportunity to speak on this great program. Listen, I'm just tuning in late, so I hope my three comments, the three things I want to point out, if they were repeated, I do apologize.
Go ahead.
Okay, first of all, I am an Obama supporter. And the thing that I find the most troubling from the people who are not necessarily Obama supporters, and I'm not just talking about the Hillary supporters, I'm talking about folks on the Republican end, too. I am so sick and so tired of this narrative that he does not have enough experience. Here's my problem.
You're going to hear it a lot until November.
Obama has more experience than Hillary Clinton. He was on the Senate, I believe, since the 1995. Hillary has only been on the Senate since 2000.
Just so you know, of course, he was on the Illinois legislature.
But I certainly understand that distinction. But they don't make that clarification. They just speak of him as if he just showed up in the world in the last 2 or 3 years, which I think is an insult. He has a much more, when I'm speaking of the experience in terms of, yes, that was on the state level, but that doesn't discredit it. That should be counted. She was the first lady. When you're first lady, you don't even have the security clearance to be access to access the things that when Bill Clinton was both the governor of Arkansas and the president of the United States, she didn't get access to a lot of those things. So I just think that it's really troubling when they don't really acknowledge that this person, Obama, has experience as far as working in the political arena and working with people to get things done.
Okay, that I want to address
that's
that.
That's my first of 3 points.
Go to your other 2 points real quick.
Okay,
and
Obama has a tenure as a constitutional lawyer. I don't think a constitutional lawyer, people don't understand, at least in my view, of what kind of experience that automatically prepares him to learn and deal with the intricacies and nuances of what federal government is about. She doesn't even come close to that. The thing that bothers me with that also is that you've got people on the right who were so willing to jump behind Bush with a whole lot less experience than what Obama has. I just don't understand, what else does Obama have to do to show that he's credible? Because I'm still, you know, you watch the MSNBC and CNN and all the pundits this morning, and everybody's just like, don't understand, you know, like people are drinking some Kool-Aid or something on Obama. People are not stupid. We're not going to vote for somebody just to put them in there like this is American Idol. Americans are not stupid. We've done the research. We know what we're looking for. And my final point is, his support has broadened. They first tried to paint him as a black candidate. And each state that he's moved along, his support among African Americans have grown. I think he won 90%.
Yes, he did.
Last night in Virginia, Maryland. That's impressive.
Yeah, but he also
50%
won half
of whites in Virginia.
Right. He won half the white vote, and in some cases, more than half the white vote. And obviously, in places like Iowa and New Hampshire and Washington.
Exactly.
You know.
So my thing is, I know you've pressed for time. I'm going to wrap it up. I thank you so much for letting me get this in. But what I want to say was, it's like with each contest, because that's what it is, a contest, each state. They keep wanting to move the goalposts. First, when he won Iowa, it was, oh, well, that was a caucus state. It don't matter. Then he won South Carolina. Oh, it's a black state. It doesn't matter. Now it's in the recent ones that Hillary has not won, she doesn't even acknowledge it. When she's won, he's at least extended a congratulations to Mrs. Clinton for a good campaign, so on. Now she's not even acknowledging what happened last night.
She's in denial. I'll tell you this, Mark. Well, I know it's disgusting. I think it's normal politics, actually. But I'll tell you this. If he wins Texas, Ohio, and Pennsylvania, those three states, which she has said she has to win all three, if he could win all three, even if he doesn't have the magic 20-25 number of delegates across the finish line, at that point, I think you would find the superdelegates, they're not stupid either, and they see a freight train when it's coming, and they're going to jump on that freight train.
Well, I want to keep my word.
Yeah, go ahead. All right, real quick.
My third and final point is, when I listen to the media and the pundits, I hear their voice. They don't understand it. And you know what people are missing? This is what people are missing. It's not so much that people are tired of the Bush. People are tired of Clinton's, too. People are tired of the same status quo. I'm going to be 40 years old this year. Every single presidential election that I have voted for, there has been a Bush or a Clinton on the ballot. Our United States was not set up for a dynasty. This is where people are tired, and that is not being discussed to me in a national discussion where people are trying to understand what are people going to get. I think a big part from the people that I've spoken to is that people are tired of the same old thing. Bush, Clinton, Bush, Clinton. You mean out of this entire country, this great country, we only got two families? that can run the country? This is ridiculous.
Well, I'll tell you this, Marcus.
That's what I think people are voting against. I do think
that the people are saying what you're saying. I've heard the Bush-Clinton line a lot. In fact, Hillary Clinton was even asked about it in a debate, and she said, well, it took a Clinton to clean out the first Bush. Maybe it'll take one to clean out the second Bush. I do think people are saying what you're saying. I think people are recognizing that Obama's growing strength.
I don't think so.
But, you know, one thing we do have to give Bill Clinton credit for is that he, like Barack Obama, did come from nowhere. I mean, he had a single mother in a poor family, and he made it. So that's sort of different from this, you know, Bush legacy, where even George Bush's father, Prescott Bush, was a senator in support of the Nazis and all kinds of stuff.
Okay.
But listen, what I do as a Democrat is, I don't know, when you attack Hillary, I want to defend her, even though I endorse Barack Obama. I just want us to come together in the fall. I want to thank you for your call, Marcus.
Okay, thank you.
Let's go to Rick. Rick, welcome to Dialogue.
Good morning, and thank you so much. And the last caller was so sharp. I really do appreciate him. One moment. Let me get this.
Yeah, you got some noises in the background. Get rid of those. That'd be great, Rick.
Yeah, I got rid of them.
Go right ahead.
All right. One of the real things here is that the whole Democratic process is screwed up.
I agree.
The rich controls both the Democrat and the Republican parties, and so whoever we get the choice of the rich.
Well, now, wait a minute. Is Obama the choice of the rich?
$100 million to run for president, and therefore a brilliant man such as yourself couldn't even run for office unless he has that kind of money or that kind of backing to do so. That is undemocratic. And then you have this jive stuff called super delegates that are not elected by the people. They're elected by their own group of cronies to the rich. And so the whole system is screwed up. Until we get rid of and straighten out campaign finance reform and have a true democracy in this country, we have absolutely nothing. We just have choices that the rich has for us.
Rick, let me agree with you partly and disagree with you partly. I completely agree with you that money plays way too much of a role in this process. I think we need public financing of campaigns. That's how they do it in virtually every other democracy on earth. They do it throughout Europe. That way you have a fair election. I mean, Mitt Romney spent millions of dollars and tried to buy everything, and you're absolutely right. It's completely unfair that money has such power. But I can't agree that they totally win. Barack Obama is doing amazingly well, and he's doing it, yes, based on money, but based on $25 here and 10 bucks here, based on Americans supporting him throughout the country. As I said, Mitt Romney spent, I think, $50 million, something like that, of his own money, and he didn't win. So while there's way too much money in the process, and you're absolutely right, and we need public financing, democracy in America is not dead yet. We still can get through those little holes in there. So we need to reform the system. You're right, but don't give up on the system, because
I won't give up on the system because I believe in the people. It is the people, 100% the people. And when we get power, we will have democracy.
Exactly.
Right now,
we can trump that. We can trump that money advantage.
And we should not fool ourselves and think that we have a choice in this matter. We really don't have a choice.
Well, wait. Hold on. You say we don't have a choice. You don't think we had a choice between Obama and Clinton and McCain? You don't think Obama's different from McCain? Come on.
No, I mean, like, if you go to a restaurant and there are 15 desserts, but they will only offer you angel food and sweet yogurt, then no, you don't have a choice.
No, but Rick, are you telling me
is the breadth of ideas and concerns that all of the people have, and we don't have that choice?
Well, just answer me this, Rick. Do you think there's a difference, a choice between Obama and McCain? Because I do. Don't you think there's a choice there?
Of course there's a choice.
All right, okay.
There's differences in all kinds of people. There's differences in myself and my brothers and sisters. There's all
right.
kinds of
Well,
differences.
No, but my point is that I think that's a real choice.
About. We're talking about opportunity for people to be represented by their choice. And Barack Obama, although I would support him, is not all of the people's choice.
No, of course not.
There are a lot of great people in this country. Ambrose Lane should be president, to tell you the truth.
Well, I like Ambrose Lane. But, you know, he's going to have to run and do things like everybody else. Look, I agree with you. There's way too much money in politics. But I think sometimes when we complain about that, and rightfully complain about that, as you have, I think we can't pretend like all the candidates are all the same out of the same box. There is a choice between Obama and McCain. You may think Obama doesn't go far enough, and that's fair, but you know, that doesn't mean you should take yourself out of the process. Thank you for your call. I appreciate it. Let's go to Otis. Otis, welcome to Dialogue.
Hey, thank you for taking my call.
My pleasure.
I think this whole political entertainment or sideshow has been tainted by what happened on 9/11. And on 9/11, after that, most Americans were forced to choose between freedom or security. And then, you know, and after the genocide and imprisonment and torture of millions of innocent people all over the world in the name of justice or the name of a war against terrorism, then after two stolen elections here, the government and corporate control of politics, trade, courts, and communications virtually ensure that no one will be brought to justice for these monumental crimes. In fact, it is sheer insanity to believe that this white supremacist, patriarchal terror domination system is going to give us power through voting or non-violent protests. Those who say, give me liberty or give me death, will also tell you that it is way past Boston Tea Party time.
Well, Otis,
and cowards and bullies cannot be expected to play by the rules, even if they make them up.
Otis, I'll tell you this. I'm glad you sort of helped, because I when I did the beginning, I said I want to talk about these constitutional problems too. So you really helped me move on to that. We had yesterday.
I'm going to let you talk, and I'm going to hang up.
All right. Well, thank you for your call. Yesterday, the Senate of the United States, including 17 Democrats, again, all the Republicans voted for it, but I don't expect them to defend the Constitution. 17 Democrats joined with the Republicans and voted to say that if Verizon or AT&T or Sprint or whoever you use is monitoring your email and listening into your phone calls without a warrant, that you can't sue them. Now, 31 Democrats, two-thirds of them, you know, or so, did vote the right way. And this bill, by the way, hasn't passed yet. The House, to Nancy Pelosi's credit so far, is standing firm. But I really want to give people a chance, because we can't just focus on the elections. We also have to focus on what's going on right now. And let's talk about this bill. You know, I also, like Senator Obama, am a constitutional lawyer. It's one of the things that I learned in law school. And it's very interesting how our constitutional rights evolved. Back in merry old England, if you will, the king was sovereign. And what that meant is you couldn't sue the king. The king could do no wrong. Okay. But if the sheriff came into your house and started going through your things and you didn't think the sheriff had a right to do it, you would sue the sheriff. And then the sheriff could defend himself by saying, hey, I had a warrant, it was legal, and then the fight would be over the legality of the warrant. In other words, in order to test whether the government could legally violate your rights, you couldn't sue the government, but you could sue the individual, the police officer, the sheriff, and that way test on whether they have a right to do these things. The exact same principle of merry old England that I learned about in law school hundreds of years ago applies today. If Verizon or AT&T or Sprint is listening into your phone calls, is monitoring your emails, and we now know they are doing it, friends, and they're doing it without a warrant, despite the fact that the Fourth Amendment to the United States Constitution expressly says they can't do it unless they have a warrant, meaning a court order supported by probable cause. They have to have reason to believe you committed a crime before they spy on you. And that makes perfect sense. I don't mind spying on terrorists. I do mind spying on innocent Americans who we have no reason to believe have done anything wrong. That, to me, smacks more of East Germany or the Soviet Union. But you can't sue the government, because our government is acting like merry old England and says, oh, no, we're immune. You can't sue us, which I disagree with, by the way. The way to go after the government is to go after these telecommunications companies. And there are dozens of lawsuits across the nation by people that have been spied on by Verizon and AT&T and Sprint. And I don't mean to single them out. Frankly, it's every single telecommunications company in the country, except for Quest, which is the only one that refused. They've been spying on us. And now the Republicans want to protect them after the fact, after they illegally spied on us. They want to protect their right not to be sued. And in doing that, protect the government's right to spy on all of us, to turn us into the way East Germany was. And a lot of Democrats are caving, including my favorite senator, Senator Webb of Virginia. I was very shocked to see him do this. But the battle is not over, friends. You know, I assume Eleanor Holmes Norton will vote the right way on this. But if you know, a lot, WPFW goes out to more than the district. Wherever you live, you need to call your member of Congress and tell him or her, and heck, if you live in Virginia, give Senator Webb a call, but tell them to stick with the House bill. The House bill says no. If you have a telecommunications company that spies on you illegally, you can sue them. Just like a peeping Tom peeping into your window. My phone calls are private. My emails are private. I don't like the government monitoring what I'm doing. If I'm not committing a crime, then stay out of my personal life. Please, if you haven't done so already, call your member of Congress. I'll even give you the number, 202-225-3121. That's for any member of Congress. That's for any senator, member of the House, and urge them to stand firm against the Bush's administrations. They call it telecom immunity. Telecom immunity. You don't want telecom immunity. What you really don't want, though, what this is all about, is you don't want the government spying on you without a warrant. If you haven't committed a crime, the government should leave your private stuff alone. So I want to thank Otis for leading me into that so that I can give you the information you need. And please, when this show is over, when you're not listening to WPFW or while you're listening to WPFW, please call your member of Congress and ask them to stand firm, because it's not over yet. If the House stands firm, we can still protect our constitutional rights. Okay, my diatribe is over. Let's go to Jen. Jen, welcome to Dialogue.
Good morning.
Good morning.
You said quite a bit, and I have many thoughts on all of it, so I'll try to be as succinct as possible.
Go.
First of all, I wanted to say that Hillary is not, as far as I understand, and I have been trying to get a clear picture of this, not in favor of socialized medicine. If anyone who mandates that we buy insurance from an insurance company
or the government,
that's not socialized medicine. That is putting more money into the insurance company's pockets, who are already raping everybody in the United States by spending less than 2% of what you spend on your insurance premiums to give you care. The whole
Hang on, Jen. There's you're part right and I think part wrong. You're right that Hillary would mandate care, and that care could go to an insurance company. My understanding is, though, at the same time, she would offer a government plan that you could buy into. So
They've never defined what defines affordable health care. And when you have insurance companies, I'd like to see how much money the insurance companies are giving to all of these candidates, which I don't know. We don't know how much that's going to be. And you know what? Anybody who says, and I'd love to get this argument from the right wing, that, the British and the Canadians are complaining because they always have to stand in line, they've got bad health care, blah, blah, blah. You know what? First of all, I've never heard a Canadian or an English person complain about that.
No, they seem to like their system.
The United States can't do this better than Canada or England or any of these other countries, that's un-American.
Jen, I think Canada and England do it really well. Every Canadian and British person I know seems to like their system. I've never met one that doesn't like their system.
Exactly, but to say that we couldn't even do it better than them, that is un-American. If you want to accuse somebody of not being a patriot, you're telling me that we can't do that better than anybody else in the United States, and that's un-American. So that's your argument to the Republicans on that one.
Jen, here's what's going on with health care. Just real quick. I think that both Obama and Hillary Clinton support universal health care, support single-payer system. They have said that they do.
No, hold on.
As an ultimate goal, I think they support it. Both believe, though, that we can't get there right away, that we have to go through a system where we sort of slowly phase out the current system. You're right. I mean, Hillary Clinton tried to do a much more radical change in 93. She was, you know, supremely bopped on the head for that. And so she's not going that far yet. I agree with you. That's the ultimate solution. I do think that both their plans bring us closer to that, though you're absolutely right. They don't bring us all the way there.
Now, the second problem the overarching problem here, what you were just ranting about so eloquently.
Thank you.
Is that the corporate personhood is the issue here. The overarching issue in all of this is corporate personhood.
Absolutely.
That whether it be the telecom industries or the health insurance industries, both of them, and the oil companies, who, by the way, Exxon is trying to sue Venezuela for cutting off their oil rights. And it's fine for us to use international courts for that, but the International Criminal Court, we're not going anywhere near such hypocrisy. But corporate personhood, and people don't know what that is and don't know what instant runoff voting is.
I'm going to explain it. I'm going to explain it.
Need to find out what those two things are, because only with when those two things, if corporate purchases is abolished and IRV is established, will we ever have democracy, because we are a republic now. That's the only way, one of the two lead steps in getting to democracy in the United States of America.
Jen, thank you very much for your call. Let me briefly explain what Jen's talking about, if you don't know. And that is that the 14th Amendment to the United States Constitution really, you know, if I had to pick a best amendment, I guess I'd have to pick that. I like most of them. But this was passed right after the Civil War. It's the one that says that everyone born in the United States is a citizen. It's the one that abolished the three-fifths clause that said that African Americans and slaves and all were three-fifths of a person. It's a wonderful amendment. And the amendment says, and I don't think this is that controversial as to what it says. It says that, I got it right here, I always carry the Constitution with me wherever I go, that no state shall make or enforce any law which shall abridge the privileges or immunities of citizens of the United States, nor shall any state deprive any person of life, liberty, or process, life, liberty, or property without due process of law, nor to deny to any person within its jurisdiction the equal protection of the laws. Now, that makes sense. Every person in America should have life, liberty, and the right to property, and should have equal protection. But the Supreme Court in the late 1800s said, what does person mean? Well, person includes individuals, and it also includes corporations. And anyone that would look at the 14th Amendment and look at it would say, huh? There are no corporations in the 14th Amendment. Where do they get that? Well, the Supreme Court was defending property rights of, you know, big corporations. There's absolutely no reason why that doctrine has to hold. It's a silly doctrine. A corporation is a legal fiction. It is a creation of the states. They have every right to regulate it in any way they choose. Corporations can't vote. Corporations, in my view, have no right to free speech. They have no rights at all except what the states give them. They have no constitutional rights. Jen is absolutely right that giving personhood to corporations makes no constitutional sense whatsoever. And in fact, it leads to a lot of problems in America. The second thing she supports is instant runoff voting. I think that's great. All you have to do is look at Louisiana, so we can do it state by state. In Louisiana, if you don't win a majority, then you have a revote with the top two candidates. And that way you can vote for any candidate of your choice. Thank you, Jen, for a terrific call. Let's go to Jay. Jay, welcome to Dialogue.
Good morning. How you doing?
Good morning.
Look, yeah, I'm going to say something, and I'll take your response off the air.
Okay.
You know, when they buried the N-word, they forgot to bury two more words, and that's the slave and the minority words. I think those two should be buried along with the N-word, because they're both inaccurate descriptions. But anyway, this whole situation with these how they boil this race down to these three candidates, man, remind me of a cat coming down the floor dribbling. I can tell by dribbling the basketball, and I can tell by his body language that he's planning on giving me the shaking, begging, the crossover dribble. Because the last time I saw something like this, we got 8 years of Ronald Reagan, 12 years of Bush, and 8 years of Clinton. And now we got another Clinton up here again. There's something wrong with this situation. It does not smell right. Thank you.
Thank you for your call. All I have to say is Obama had a tremendous victory yesterday, and we may not have another Clinton. So, you know, don't give up on the system. Let me go to Frank. Frank, welcome to Dialogue.
Well, this is Calvin. How are you?
Oh, I'm sorry. Calvin, welcome.
No problem. Again, there's two points I want to make. The public secret surveillance that was passed by the Senate you were talking about.
Right.
I believe it was retroactive also.
That's correct. So they could break the law and then later on say, well, it's okay now. It's
well,
exactly right.
See, I think that we're getting too focused on the presidential race. We need to bring in a majority in the Senate. All we have is 52?
50 and a half.
Yes, well,
we've got 50 in Lieberman. So that's
going to stop things like this from happening. So I'm saying to you is that it's good to support Obama, but also we have to make sure we put more Democrats inside the Senate now, because it would be hard for Obama, being a Democratic president, to deal with a Republican Senate. No different when Clinton was in. He
right.
had to deal with a totally Newt Gingrich and his total Republican Congress, okay?
You're absolutely right. It's
so
very
to make
important.
Easy for Obama, I think we need to help him.
You're absolutely right. We need more Democrats in Congress. And also, you're absolutely right. We shouldn't so focus on the presidential campaign that we don't notice what Congress is doing now, which is why I brought up telecommunications immunity. And I really encourage everyone, give your member of Congress a call. It's not too late now, 202-225-3121. You can find it on the web and tell people you don't want the government spying on you without a warrant.
May I add?
And if they do it, you sue those companies.
May I add one more thing?
Yeah, real quick.
We need to parallel this to a local political party. We need to put more people of common sense in the city council. Forget about Adrian Finley. He's just a mayor, but he can't do no more than what the council allows him to do. I think there's still enough middle-class folks here, black folks here, to put those people in those city council positions that would do now for the people and leave these developers out of our treasury right now, because we're doing a lot of building.
Okay, I hear
but
you.
We're not building buildings. We're not building people and character in people now.
It's a good point. I'll tell you, I only got a few. I want to get as many callers as I can. I only got a few minutes left. Bo, welcome to Dialogue. Oh, we lost Bo. Okay, now we'll go to Frank. Frank, welcome to Dialogue.
Hello, is this me?
Yes, it is. Hello, Frank.
Oh, I'm sorry. This is Andy.
This is Andy. All right.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Andy.
Well, great. Thanks for all the great ideas this morning. This is a wonderful program.
Thank you.
I would like to comment on the superdelegates.
Yeah.
I think they should go on the Democratic side. I don't really care what the Republicans do to choose their nominee.
Should they go this year, or since the rules have already been made, should they go 4 years from now? I mean, can you change the rules in the middle of the game? What do you think?
Oh, I think they should go immediately.
Okay.
But the other thing is, I think this primary system needs to change. I would hate to see an opportunity like the one that's been provided Barack Obama disappear. In other words, he's gaining momentum now, and
this is
wonderful. So I'd hate to see everybody voting for a candidate on the same day.
But right. No, I agree. I like the state-by-state system. I just think that you need to, first of all, space it out. I mean, Super Tuesday is ridiculous, 22 states on one day. And the other thing is, it's unfair to always give Iowa and New Hampshire first choice. You've had your chance for many years. Give another state a chance.
Well, we could write a great formula for this, determined by the size of the state, and then rotate the states.
I agree with you.
Yeah.
I support something like that, and I think something could be done. But I'll tell you, because state law decides when states vote, there's always going to be this race to the bottom. There's always going to be this competition among states leapfrogging over each other. We may have the 2012 election in 2010. We need Congress to step in and start controlling the system. And that's another thing. While you're calling your member of Congress about telecommunications immunity, mention to them that you want a sane primary system where every state gets a chance. Thank you for your call, Andy. Do we finally have Frank here, or is this Chico?
This is Chico.
This is Chico. I think we lost Frank. All right. Hi, Chico. How are you?
I'm good. How you doing?
I'm good. What's your comment?
My comment is this. I hope that coming out of yesterday, I hope that people feel good after November as they do today after last night. Now, I'm going to go back to a couple of callers ago. I don't think you understood him very well when he was saying that it doesn't make a real bit of difference. I don't think it makes a big bit of difference either.
Between Obama and McCain?
I think that the money, not the money in terms of money donated so much, but money in terms of the money that's there that you have to protect in terms of the status quo. Rich people are going to make sure that they get what they're supposed to get, whether it's Hillary Clinton, Obama, or McCain.
Really? You don't think there'd be any difference between Obama and McCain on that?
You have the Kennedys, you have the Lincolns. And so forth. They get what they're supposed to get. When you start upsetting the apple cart in America, you got a problem.
And so what's your solution,
Chico? If Obama's going to be able to do any different because his daddy was an African, then I think that we're misunderstanding this whole thing.
And
number two, the other thing is this. I find it real interesting that 8 years ago, Clinton was touted as being a black man.
Well, that's by Toni Morrison.
Now all of a sudden, we done jumped off his bandwagon and jumped on a new bandwagon and riding a different horse in the middle of the stream. I just find that real curious. You don't play politics that way. So if anybody thinks it's interesting that Charlie Rangel and the rest of these folk are backing Hillary, they have to back Hillary because they owe too much to Bill Clinton. We got in bed with Bill Clinton, and now we want to kick Bill out the bed. You can't kick Bill out the bed like that because we owe him too much.
So, Chico, we got to close, but who did you vote for yesterday?
I voted for Chico Rodriguez for president.
Okay, you voted for yourself. Thanks for your call. The problem with that, with Chico, I mean, look, I understand no candidate's perfect. The only candidate who 100% supports your views is yourself, and that's why Chico voted for himself. But at the end of the day, we have to make choices, and in my view, both Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama are fine choices. I endorsed Obama. I think he's the better choice. But either one of them, I think, is leagues better than John McCain. I realize that that America changes only slowly and incrementally, and that we've got decades to get out from under the hole that George Bush dug us in. But we got to work with what we got. And I think Senator Obama would have dramatic change. Thank you, everybody, for listening on this dialogue. I will see you next month, the second Wednesday. This is Mark Levine signing off.
A conversation in which we all get a chance to speak, to listen, to be heard, and to collaborate to solve our problems. Participatory democracy is not just insider talk about or among winners. To be part of a genuine democracy, we all must be encouraged actively to partake in its conversation.